Hey everyone, welcome to the Racing Writers Podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Crandall. This week, Jerry Freeze sits down with me, the general manager of Front Row Motorsports, to share a little bit about his background, but we're really digging into everything that's going on over there at that two-car team in the Cup Series and the championship-contending truck in the Camping World Truck Series. Jerry is so insightful anytime you talk to him, and I really appreciate anytime I do get to talk to him because he's so open and so honest, and he brings that to the podcast today. We're going to dig into how Jerry got into NASCAR from having a successful lawn care business and learning from Tad Geschechter. You recognize Tad's name because he is the co-owner at JTG Doherty Racing. Jerry went from learning under Tad to spending 12 years at Richard Petty Enterprises to Front Row Motorsports, and he's going to explain what it takes to be a general manager in the Cup Series, how the organization prepared for the next-gen race car, a lot of interesting detail there, such as what are they doing with their old inventory? A lot of people thought maybe it would go to other series, such as the Xfinity Series or the ARCA Menards Series, but Jerry shares what they've done with their cars and some of the parts and pieces they still have. He also explains what next-gen means for teams that have alliances, because they've worked very closely with Roush Fenway over the years. And we're going to dig into all three of the drivers at Front Row Motorsports. Great insight onto the Truck Series business and how they really thought whether they were going to have a team after last season when they promoted Todd Gilliland into the Cup Series. Jerry takes us inside if Zane Smith is surprised to him at all. We talk about Michael McDowell continuing to shine and evaluate Todd Gilliland's rookie season. And we're going to close it out just, again, talking about those three drivers and how realistic it is for them to consider themselves playoff contenders and if they're going to try to have some stability with that group of drivers going forward. So again, a lot of great insight from Jerry Freeze, a great team at Front Row Motorsports, one of the better mid-pack teams that is really showing up and contending every week and really has become a contender to make the playoffs the last couple years. That's another part of the conversation with Jerry. Let's get into it. Hope you enjoy it. Here is Jerry Freeze on the Racing Writers Podcast. No, you're good. You are good, Jerry. Thank you for welcoming me this morning, early this morning, to Front Row. Like I said, I want to pick your brain on a few things, but let's start with your background. You did a fantastic podcast with Nate Ryan a couple years ago I went back and listened to and really gave him some great tidbits about some of your background. But I wanted to cover a few things just because you came from a lawn care business in Virginia. You had a successful lawn care business and came into NASCAR. And I heard you say in that podcast you'd always been a NASCAR fan and interested in the business side of it. So what was so intriguing that you wanted to take the chance to actually work in NASCAR instead of just being a race fan?
Yeah, I don't know. I grew up, my dad had a race car when I was growing up, and he had a drag car, and he had a, him and another guy had a late model sportsman car, and we raced on Friday nights in Beltsville, Maryland, Saturday nights in Old Dominion Speedway in Manassas in Virginia. And anyways, I kind of grew up with racing in my veins a little bit and did whatever I could to stay out of the way and cheer on the cars. But I was just a kid then. But my dad was always super passionate about NASCAR, and we would go to a lot of races to wherever we could, in Dover and Richmond and Darlington and Charlotte and where not. And so I was just a big fan growing up and always kind of maintained, you know, just an affection for the sport. And I'm an old guy, so back in the 70s and 80s. But anyways, got out of college. I was working for a guy that in the landscape commodities business, if you will, and helped selling product with him, and kind of started doing that straight out of school. And it just morphed into having my own landscape lawn care business, and did that for about 10 years up until mid-80s, I guess. Well, no, I take that back. I started it mid-80s, carried on to the mid-90s. And sold it to a friend of mine who had a neighboring business, and you know, had a little bit of money in my pocket, and just I was still just passionate about NASCAR. And NASCAR was really exploding then in the 90s with all the corporate business. And I thought, with what I knew in, let's say, small business ownership, management, whatnot, that maybe I could apply some of those skills. And it wasn't necessarily a team, but in the NASCAR business, you know. So, and like I said, I'd sold my business, had some money I could live off of for a while, so I just knocked on some doors, and the one person that gave me an opportunity was Tad Geschechter, who was just starting his race team at that time, and worked for him and Jody for a year and a half, and really got a, it was just like a the greatest internship there ever was, you know, because I just learned all facets of the operation side of racing. And they were super generous with me and giving me that opportunity. And really, a lot of the stuff I started doing the first week with them, a lot of the same stuff I do today, just figuring out how we're going to get to the racetrack and plugging all those holes with who's, uh-oh, truck driver can't go, or, you know, got to get this guy a credential and this guy need a pit crew guy or whatever. So anyways, kind of took that experience with Tad and Jody, and then I feel like had a real legitimate job then with Petty Enterprises in 1996 and started with them.
When you sold the business and came to North Carolina, you said they're about knocking on doors. So did you not have anything lined up? Was it a typical racing story to where just get me to North Carolina and see if I can make this work in racing?
That was exactly my story. I had zero lined up. You know, I had a few connections in the business. You know, I think even with the first time, you know, sitting down and talking with Tad, I think the only thing that really intrigued him was we both lived in Fairfax County, Virginia. And so we were sitting there talking about it and talking about playing baseball in different rec leagues and things like that, and probably had played against each other at some point because we were the same age. And, you know, so anyways, we just had a lot of commonality there and kind of, you know, he just gave me an opportunity. But I knew who people were, but I didn't know them, you know. And so I talked a good game and was able to get myself in a few front doors. And anyways, it all worked out. So, yeah, it was kind of a miracle that it worked out kind of the way it did and as quick as it did, but and as good as it did, for sure.
Not an unfamiliar story to many in racing of how you have to make it happen. You mentioned Petty Enterprises. I think that was about 12 years that you spent over there. Mm-hmm. So how was it that you came here to Front Row and still general manager, right? That's still the title.
Yeah. So that's a good story, too. So, I was at Petty Enterprises 12 years. You know, maybe I'm part of why it closed. But so I was there till the end, kind of last guy there at the end with selling our equipment. And so it was end of 2008 season going into 2009. It was a really rough time, rough patch for NASCAR teams with the economy was really in a deep dive at that point. A lot of sponsors were bailing out, not just Petty Enterprises, but DEI, Bill Davis Racing, a few others. Ginn had already gone out. A lot of teams were shutting down and losing sponsorship. And that year we had sold a big chunk of the team to an investment group called Boston Ventures. And Boston Ventures was kind of standing there like, ooh, what do we do with no sponsorship? We're going to keep on running this thing. And so they ended up just kind of taking Richard's entity, let's say, and morphing it into Gillette Evernham. And then we just shut down the Petty Enterprise team. Well, at the same time, as I'm a guy standing there with another guy selling all the equipment that we had, John Andretti came along, who drove for us at Petty Enterprises, and John was going to drive for Front Row Motorsports the next year. And so John walked in the shop one day, started looking around, and asked what we were going to do with all this stuff. And I said, we're trying to sell it. And he said, I got a guy that wants to buy a lot of stuff. And so talked to John for quite a bit. And then at some point, Bob Jenkins came along and looked at everything that we had, and then Bob and I kind of picked up the dialogue from where John and I had taken it. So I ended up, you know, selling a lot of the majority, almost all of the stuff we had at Petty Enterprises, the haulers, the pit boxes, a lot of race cars, various shop equipment. And Bob had already been running Front Row for a few years, but more, you know, part-time cup, some Xfinity racing, a small outfit out of Denver. But Bob was really wanting to take the opportunity to acquire some really good assets. He had a good driver in John that was going to drive the full season for him, and I think Bob was really wanting to, you know, try to make his mark with Front Row Motorsport in NASCAR at that time. So anyways, got to know Bob and really liked his story. You know, it was going to be kind of a whole startup thing with the Front Row Cup team, and so it was a good opportunity that we could take some of the really good, diverse people that we had at Petty Enterprises and find them jobs. And I just kind of came along for the ride and helped guide it along. And we kind of started there in 2009.
You said your role as general manager is to make sure everybody gets to the racetrack, but I'm sure there's more to it than that.
Yeah, no, there's more to it than that. I like to say a general manager is a very apt title for me because I'm no expert in anything, but I know generally a little bit about everything that goes on here, from the competition side or what the shop operations need to be, all the facility issues that we got to deal with on an ongoing basis, the hiring, the disciplinary actions that we might have to do. and the marketing side of it too, which is a huge part of it. And you know, I'm not the lead dog in any of those areas, but they all kind of report up to me here in our, and I feel like I know a little bit about each aspect of it and can kind of push them and give them my own little guidance there. And hopefully we keep the ball rolling and keep growing this thing.
That's a good segue. I want to ask about the state of Front Row as we wind down the year. It's quickly coming to a close here. Some great numbers from Michael. Todd has shown some flashes of figuring it out in the Cup Series as a rookie. Even in the Truck Series, Zane, of course, championship contender. What would you say is just maybe the overall state of how the company looks right now as we get ready to end the 2022 season?
Yeah, I think good. You know, I feel as good about it as I ever have. You know, we're, I feel like we've got, you know, a driver lineup that we really like, all three guys. We, you know, got crew chiefs that we really like, and we're building good programs around. You know, we were really, in December, really kind of questioning what was 2022 going to look like. You know, we had had a kind of a good solid group around the 34 for a while with Michael. We had, you know, had our best years with Michael. You know, Drew Blickensterfer was with us, and you know, we were building something there. One Daytona last year, that was huge, and things kind of fell off the rails a little bit after that though, and we were somewhat caught off guard. Not surprised that Drew would move on, but just the timing of it, you know. And he got an opportunity kind of late in the game to go to Stuart Haas, and I don't blame him. It was a great opportunity, and but we weren't prepared for it. You know, we really didn't have a great option on how to replace Drew. And our car chief at the time, he was wanting to come off the road, and it was like, ooh, boy, the wheels are just coming off this 34. And it had been really stable for us for a number of years. But Blake Harris had kind of come up and was interested in an opportunity. He hadn't had a crew chief opportunity before in the Cup Series, longtime car chief, tons of wins with Furniture Row and Joe Gibbs Racing with their programs. And anyways, got to talking to Blake, and by Christmas time or so, we kind of had it all sewed up, and he had a car chief in mind to bring into the team, Ryan Bergenti, and they've just brought a lot of just a different race craft to our team, and, you know, and they've, it's been fun to see. I mean, they're really engaged with what goes on in the shop and do a great job at the racetrack, and they've just built a really good chemistry. In the first four or five races, we were a little rocky in this season, but since then, I mean, we've been consistently one of the better cars, I feel like, and Michael's had 10 top 10s, and, you know, that's certainly a career year for him, best Front Row's ever had, so, you know, we just want to try to continue that trend and keep building on it, and, you know, it's been just a really, really good group, and as you mentioned, you know, Todd's had flashes of speed, especially of late, especially at the road courses, and you know, there's some tracks been a little more of a struggle than some others, but I really think starting to see Todd going back to these tracks a second time now, you know, there's just a little more comfort level, and you think about it, you know, like him going to some places, Road America comes to mind, where, you know, the kid's never run a lap there in his life, and he's got 20 minutes to figure it out and qualify and go run the race, and so he's learning as the race goes on, and you go to places like Dover and challenging places like that, Martinsville, and it's tough for those guys to get that feel. So we're committed to Todd for the long run, and you know, and we know the speed's there. We just gotta pull it out of them and get the right group around them. And we've had some turnover on the 38 team this year that hadn't helped. And you know, but it's going in a good direction right now. So I think they're gonna have some good stuff the rest of the year. And gosh, the truck team, I mean, it's just been phenomenal for us. And we've had an awesome group with Chris Lawson and Dylan Capello and Kyle Moon leading that charge, and they've been with us for a few years now, and you know, we moved Todd out of that group, plugged Zane in, that was the only change we made, and boom, they just took off and won the race at Daytona and won a couple more races and won the regular season points thing, and now we're in the playoffs, and you know, and I'm looking for really great things out of them for the rest of the year.
Absolutely. I want to dig more into your drivers in a minute, but let's talk about something else you just mentioned there, next gen. Obviously, the big variable coming into this season. Was there ever a point, Jerry, last year when the company has to start preparing for 2022 and the inventory is going to change and just everything that comes with preparing for a new car? Was there ever a point last year where anybody said, you know what, maybe we need to punt on this and start trying to get ahead and focusing on the future? Or did you try to balance, we still need to perform in 2021 while also worrying about 2022? How did Front Row prepare for next gen?
It was a little different for sure. So, you know, especially in our case, because we had won Daytona, we were in the playoffs. And so on one, thinking about, if you're just looking at it from that next gen and inventory conversion perspective, you just want to phase out everything and hopefully have it all mileaged out just right by the end of the year and you can discard of it. But in this case, we wanted to have the best stuff we could have for the playoffs. And we knew, especially those first three races, it was going to be hard for us to get out of the first round. So, and there was a couple of races that weren't necessarily our best tracks or Michael's best tracks in Darlington and Richmond that we thought, boy, we got to be on our game here, you know. So, you know, we went, bought new chassis from Roush and hung new bodies, and we were making a big commitment on inventory, 2021 inventory, to get through the playoffs. And, you know, and it didn't work out. We didn't get through the first round. But so on one hand, we were trying to get through that. With the 38 last year, we had a lot of crashes and a lot of hurt race cars. So it was just trying to get to the finish line, really. But luckily, you know, we had a lot of inventory that, and we still actually do, of the old cars that, you know, we were able to, you know, pull some cars out we probably hadn't planned on racing in the second half of last year just to make it through. But so it was kind of like two different tales going on with our two teams. And I feel like we did the best we could to try to manage all our inventory levels to not have brand new brake rotors or whatever sitting on the shelf. There was some stuff that could be carried over to the new car. There was some stuff that we could run on the truck, you know, talking about brake rotors and things like that. But anything else, you know, I think our guys did a really good job of managing that.
You mentioned about still having some inventory. That's interesting because I know there's a lot of fans who are always so curious of, well, what happens when teams have to make such a change? I mean, what can you do with that stuff over time? I mean, what happened to some of it? And again, you still have some of it sitting here. What will happen to that? Yeah. What can you tell us about what a race team does with old inventory that literally is obsolete?
I wish somebody would call me and tell me. You know, we've got a warehouse in Statesville full of this stuff.
Yeah.
And I've noticed quite a few organizations. Roush Fenway just did it, have auctions. Mm. And I think ultimately that's what we'll do. We've been able to sell some cars. You know, the problem is that the cup chassis, the body style, all that, it's just not legal in any other series. So probably the closest would be to run the Xfinity series, but the body's not legal. The front clip isn't what anybody wants, so you would have to cut off the front end and put a new front end on it. So you're kind of getting down to, is it really worth it to do all that? And then will the suspension fit if you've, you know, raised or lowered the front clip and that you had with it? So it's tough to find that buyer. So there's some of these guys that do the vintage road racing that want to have cars. We've always got interest in selling the road race cars. Everything else has been a little bit of a struggle. So we've got, you know, a few sponsors are looking for cars. We're going to put them back together this winter and allocate them out there. But I think ultimately we'll just end up probably hang on to all the road race cars we have. And I don't know how many we got left, but those are the ones there's a market for, and everything else we'll probably end up having an auction for.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Thank you for explaining that, because I think there was the belief by some that, oh, it'll just go to Xfinity or ARCA teams. But as you said, it's really not that easy when it comes down to what the templates are and the rules for those series. Yeah. So looking at next gen, how much of an X factor has that been when it comes to the performance this year? Because there's been a lot of talk on it should hopefully level the playing field. Everybody has to figure it out together, that type of thing. Has that been any bit of a help maybe to Front Row this year in terms of being on that quote-unquote level playing field?
I think it has, you know. I think it has. I think, you know, I bemoan the fact of lack of practice for somebody like Todd, but on the other hand, I think it helps a team like Front Row. You know, I think when you give four-car organizations 2 or 3 hours of practice on a weekend and all that data that they can consume and analyze and put into their race car for Sunday, you know, I think that can make a big difference too. So, you know, so everybody having that limited practice session, essentially having the same cars out there, and it's just up to how you adjust it, how you adjust it during the race, how good your pit crew is and your driver and spotter and all that stuff, you know, I do think it does level the playing field. And I think it has helped, you know, the last 2 years, really, ever since the pandemic, I've felt like when NASCAR put a moratorium on part development, chassis development, locked in on the body rules, locked down on the aero or the wind tunnel time that a team, an organization could have, that really seemed to make as much a difference for Front Row as anything. And where teams weren't constantly just developing it at a rate that we just couldn't keep up with, and that's what we were faced with before that. So now all of a sudden, you couldn't update the chassis, you couldn't update the suspension components, and the amount of wind tunnel everybody had, wind tunnel time everybody had, was at a rate the Front Row could afford to go to the wind tunnel at. And at, so we had the same amount of time as everybody else. So when it was balanced like that, you know, all of a sudden we were a more competitive race car every week. So I think, you know, the all of it's kind of come around to help us. There's some things, though, that I feel like with the new rules that, you know, I think need to be looked at. NASCAR's got a ban on the teams going to the wind tunnels now, so the OEMs go to the wind tunnels, and the OEMs don't necessarily share information to all the teams equally. So if you can't go to the wind tunnel and you can't get that information, where do you get it from? So that's a challenge that we're trying to solve for. And but, you know, I think our guys have done a great job overcoming, you know, not necessarily knowing everything about this car and just taking it and learning by the week and applying the things that have worked this week to a similar track the next week and just growing their notebook. And maybe it's helped in some ways of not trying to keep up with this one or that one's doing and just doing our own thing. And but anyways, I do think, to answer your question, I think it does help a team like Front Row that we've invested for the last number of years in the best engine program we can get at Roush Yates. We buy all the tires to go race with. You know, we got good pit crews on Sundays. And, you know, but sometimes the mousetrap we took to run around the track isn't quite as evolved as that guy's mousetrap. So solve for that one here with the car.
The parity that we've seen this year in terms of there's more teams often represented inside the top 10 and in the finishing results. Michael certainly, again, as you said, is having a career year when it comes to top 10 finishes. We've seen Petty GMS come in with Eric, mm-hmm. and that 43 has been fast. So when you look at parity like that, do you think that will continue over time, Jerry, because of this car? Or are we going to get to a point where eventually the bigger teams are going to science it out and we'll start to have that gap that we're so used to? If you can look into the crystal ball, what do you think is going to happen with this car?
Yeah, well, it's like I said, that's where I'm concerned with the information, you know, that if we're limited in gathering information and some teams can get it and some teams can't, does that all of a sudden create a divide? And our car and the 43 car, as you mentioned, they've run great. You know, Trackhouse has been out of sight this year. You know, there's been some teams you didn't expect that were going to be so competitive. And, you know, so I am a little concerned that, you know, as people figure this car out, and if you don't have that information to continue to figure it out, you just get left behind. But I don't know. I think there may be some tightening of the rules coming, I hear, that, you know, that will take away maybe some of that creative advantage some people can get. And I don't say creative, but maybe to maxing out tolerances, mm-hmm. and stuff, those tolerances might close up a little bit. I think that's all being talked about. So I don't know. It might not make a difference. And then it's just down to who's got the best driver and what crew chief made the best setup calls and taking that driver feedback and adjusting on it during the race and the pit crews executing. And if that's the case, then, you know, you should see the driver talent come to the top. And I think that's, in Michael's case, I think that's what's happening is, you know, Michael's a really talented race car driver, and there's some tracks he is fantastic on, and a lot of tracks that, you know, he's better than what you think. You know, we just haven't always given him the best race car, and, you know, and I think he's been able to showcase that quite a bit.
What does next gen mean for when it comes to alliances? Because in the past, Front Row has worked very closely with a Roush Fenway. Mm-hmm. Does that still apply with next gen, or has next gen helped a team stand on their own a little bit more?
Yeah, it's definitely helped you stand on your own a little bit more. You know, in our case with Roush Fenway, I mean, we still have an alliance there, and it's still a good alliance, but it's not as deep as mm-hmm. it was. And, you know, and I mean that from, you know, we would buy a chassis from Roush. We would buy the suspension parts from Roush. We would put it together here. We were kind of working together on aero programs. And so if there was something that, you know, you put the roof on backwards this week, you know, well, we put the roof on backwards if that's what they thought was best. And so anyways, you know, so we worked hand in hand with buying and assembling their product and then racing with them and then sharing the information to hopefully continue to evolve the product. Well, now we're not buying any more parts from them. And we are still sharing some information, but it's a little more limited. And so there's still communication there, but it's nowhere near as deep as what it was. So I think that's a question of, is an alliance really necessary mm-hmm. going forward? You know, we thought it was a new car this year. Probably wouldn't be a bad idea to keep some kind of relationship there. We use one of their developmental pit crews on the 34 car, and so it's a good relationship, and I think it'll probably continue, but it'll just evolve into what's really needed and necessary or wanted right. between both organizations.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No,
right?
Not at all.
Yeah, because like you said, the relationship is still good, but it's probably also a feel-good moment that Front Row gets to the point where a car like this can help them be mm-hmm. a little bit more independent, mm-hmm. right? And kind of make your own decisions as
yeah.
you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
The financial impact of Next Gen, that's not going to be felt from a team side for years, right? Like, that's not, I know
it was felt this year, let me tell you.
Right, and it, right, yeah, when you have to change inventory, of course, but in terms of this car, as you know, was sold to everybody as over time. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it will cut expenses, this, that, and the other thing. But that is something that, from a team perspective, probably won't be seen for, I would assume, probably, what, 2-3, maybe longer years down the road?
Yeah, if it is ever seen.
Right.
You know, I think, Kelly, that's something people ask me that all the time. You know, how much money are we saving with the new car? And it's just laughable. But honestly, I think the jury's still out. You know, is it? You hate to just talk about cost savings, economics, and all that, but it's all part of it, and it was all part of what the intent was, to slow down the development of the race cars and the expense of the development of the race cars. But, you know, we've got a much more expensive race car, and sometimes, you know, you have I'll give you a great example. We finished fourth at Indy with Todd Gilliland and had to take the car out of the cycle afterwards because he had hit a bump during the race, and it had bent the center section of the chassis. So it didn't affect the car performance-wise in any way, but, you know, we sent it back to the chassis place to take a look at it, and they said, oh, yeah, you can't race this anymore. So, all right. Well, so, and there's been a lot of races like that where you come back and you had a good finish, and it's like, well, we got to replace this $20,000 part, and we got to replace those $10,000 rocker boxes and this and that from, and it's like, my gosh, you know. And so I'm not absolutely sure it's going to be as economical as we all think, but I'll say this for Front Row Motorsports, maybe for Penske, Gibbs, Hendrick, that was always building the next mousetrap, as I call it, mm-hmm. and putting a ton of dollars into the development of their race cars, they should save some money. Mm-hmm. Front Row wasn't developing the race cars. We were paying Roush a technology fee to use their technology and then buying their stuff. So now we're just buying it from somebody else, and it just costs a lot more than what it did when we just bought it from Roush. So I'm not sure for Front Row, and I said that from the beginning, you know, I don't know that, I was just kind of hoping it would cost us the same amount to go racing and we would be more competitive, because we had the same product we're taking to the racetrack. And, you know, but I think it's going to be in the ballpark of probably where we were spending before, but I don't know that there's a big cost savings to it.
Right. Hopefully in the future.
Hopefully.
Right? It's nice to hope, right?
Yeah, hopefully Bob's not listening to this. But
so let's talk about your drivers. Let's start with Zane, the truck series.
Yeah.
He comes in, and I'm just curious, has any of it been a surprise at all? Because you bring in a new driver, and sometimes a team would be like, okay, we need to build, we need to gel, you know, we need to get our feet underneath us. But he's jumped into this truck, and you all have not missed a beat. You said it right. I mean, he started the year at Daytona, and you guys have just kept on winning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think many label him the championship favorite as we continue on down this late in the year. I mean, has that been a surprise at all to see how quickly that team is kind of come out swinging?
Yeah, yes and no. Yes and no. You know, when we hired Zane, you know, he was certainly on our radar, and, you know, he's finished second in the point standings last 2 years. He's won some races, beat Todd at Martinsville last year at the end in a good, clean race. And, you know, so we knew Zane was a really, really good driver, and we knew we had a really good team in place with our 38 truck team, and nobody changed on it. The only thing we changed was plugging Zane in it this year. And, you know, I just assumed there would be a learning curve there. But, you know, Zane had relationships with the guys on the team. You know, our team engineer, Dylan Capello, is a late mile racer in California. He raced against Zane. So they were buddies in California way before they came to North Carolina. And they were all in the same clique. So Zane just fit the group so easy. And then I think Zane was just really determined to show, hey, with a new group, I can still do it, and new manufacturer and all that. And I think he was really on keel to start the year, and we had good trucks, and, you know, no real – in all my experience in racing, the longer you can keep a group together and the more they gel, the better it's going to be, whether it's a pit crew or road crew or whatever. And that group's been together a long time, and they just know how to work together and how to do everything at the racetrack and be prepared. And, you know, we took off like a jackrabbit the first half of the year, and we've had a few races that haven't quite gone our way, but I think they've been kind of testing some stuff that they wanted to try in the playoffs, so I think they're going to be just fine. But we're really happy with Zane. When we signed him, we kind of had this long-term plan with him. We just announced that he's going to be back next year driving the 38 truck. We want to get his feet wet running some cup races next year, too. Zane's big thing is he just wants to race more. You know, the 23-race truck schedule, having all these weekends off, you know, I would love it, but he's totally different, and he wants to race more, and we've actually talked to Ford about some fun things that he might get to do, too. So, I think he's going to be busier than ever next year, and so I'm excited to see how he does in some of the other series. You know, he got a chance to jump in Roush's car at St. Louis and filled in for Chris that weekend, and I thought he did great, so I'm really excited to see how he does with the schedule he's going to have next year.
It's going to be fun to watch. He did a fantastic job to jump in mm-hmm. last minute for Chris at Gateway. The truck team, you said they're about keeping a team together that's been together for so long. When Todd moved to the Cup car, was there any thought of what are we going to do with this truck team? Because you all had that partnership with David Gilliland Racing. So take us through just the thought process of, do we keep the truck team? Do we think about not running the truck team? Eventually you sign Zane. What went into all of those decisions of whether or not, again, to just still field a truck here?
Yeah, that's another good story, I think. But we got in the truck business really to help Todd out. It was right after Todd got let go at Kyle Busch Motorsports. Bob, especially myself, we all felt like he kind of got a raw deal. Didn't really get a chance, you know. And anyways, he had moved on from Kyle Busch Motorsports. Wasn't sure what he was going to do. You know, we reached out to David. Hey, what are you going to do with Todd next year? And anyways, we kind of came up with this plan to where Front Row would go try to find sponsorship and provide sponsorship and have this Front Row truck that was run, you know, in concert with David Gilliland Racing. And so, I felt like we got in from a marketing perspective on the truck team the first year. The second year, we got a little more serious about it. We actually started leasing the equipment from DGR. We moved the truck team over into our shop. We hired people to work on it, kind of took the same core group around it. And so anyways, we got to the end of last year, and when we decided to move Todd into the Cup car, you know, I just kind of thought, okay, we're out of the truck business now, you know. We only did this, but we were having fun. Bob especially really loves the truck series, and I think loves seeing Front Row being a little more competitive in the truck series too, and the truck series is fun, and we all it was a good thing to have in the shop. And but anyways, kind of new equipment wise, it probably wasn't the best time. We didn't own any engines, we were leasing the trucks, didn't own a hauler. Next Gen is rolling in. These, you know, 20,000, 100,000, you know, bills are rolling in every other day. And so anyways, I was aware that Zane was looking for a new opportunity. So I'd shared that with Bob. And he said, gosh, if you could sign him, he said, I just don't want to keep the truck team going for anybody. But if you could get somebody like Zane Smith, I'll buy all that stuff from David and we'll keep on going. And I just took a deep breath, like, wow, Bob, I don't think you realize the scope of what we're spending here. But anyways, we called Zane. They were on the cusp of signing the deal with somebody else, and it was all very 11th hour, but we quickly got a contract over to him. He signed it, and we worked out a deal with DGR to buy all the trucks, the hauler, bought a bunch of engines from Ilmor, and we were in the truck business knee-deep now. And we've added some resources around it here this year. And, you know, it's been a really good thing to have in the shop, you know, because we've got the same assembly crews, same suspension guys, same guys that put together the cup cars, put together the trucks. And so for them, you know, and some I'm talking more old front row, you know, where you're getting your head beat in on Sundays. It's kind of good that, hey, we're putting together a truck to go win on Friday night, you know. And so it gives those guys a little spring in their step that, you know, that we can build race winning stuff out of here. And we've been fortunate, won a couple cup races too, but you know, seeing that truck, there's a lot of pride in that truck, and starts with Bob. He's got a ton of pride in it this year for sure, and we all do. I do, and we're really proud of those guys, and hopefully they can continue the trend and get us the big trophy after Phoenix.
I think you have a very good shot at that. Let's shift to Todd. We mentioned Todd and his rookie season. It seems like, as you touched on earlier, that the longer the season has gone, the more comfortable he's getting and starting to show some good runs here and there. And he's even gotten the attention, I don't know if you heard, but Denny Hamlin praised him publicly about racing around him and what he saw from Todd. So I'm sure that was a huge boost to Todd. How would you grade his rookie season? Again, not only new car for everybody, but he's coming in, not a lot of track time as we discussed. How would you just grade how he's progressed from Daytona to here we are late in the year?
Yeah. You know, I think he's probably done exactly what we wanted him to do. You know, we were very, even with the setups on the cars, let's say, you know, I think Blake and his engineer, Chris Yurgis and Michael, have been a little more on that edge with their setups, you know, just trying to max everything out. And, you know, Michael's experience will carry us through if we go over that edge, or, you know, and with Todd, it's been a little more vanilla. And so we've probably hurt Todd a bit speed-wise with maybe what we've taken to the racetrack with them. And just really in the last month or so, we've just said, okay, let's just set them up exactly the same way. And since we've done that, we've seen more speed out of Todd just rolling off the truck. So we were probably holding him back a little bit more. Like I said, we've had some turnover on his team that hasn't helped matters a little bit. So it's always tough in the middle of the season getting new people and getting them to gel and figure things out. So a lot of it I certainly don't blame Todd for, but he's done a really good job of running all the laps. We had a bad break at Watkins Glen. We're leading the race with Todd, and he was running great. I mean, the start of the race, I swear to God, when the rain, if it could have just kept raining at Watkins Glen, I think we would have finished 1-2, because Todd every lap is just moving up 3 or 4 spots and had just raced his way right on up there. And
Michael was leading
by, you know, 10 seconds or something. So I hated to see the rain go away. But anyways, Todd got in the lead after the second stage, and, you know, he was holding them all off with no problem. And we had a part break in the half shaft, I think, that kind of ruined our day. But before that, you know, I think Todd was like fourth in laps run this year. Mm-hmm. So he's done, going back to the point, we just wanted him first half of the year to get experience, get comfortable racing these guys, figure out when you got to race, when you got to, you know, take care of it and get comfortable racing in this series and not try to put him in a bad spot. And he has done it. I mean, he has brought the car home, but now it's time to see what he can do, you know. And I think we're starting to see that, you know. Great run at Indy, was looking great at Watkins Glen until we had the parts failure, you know. And I think him going back to these tracks the second time, it's, like I said, it's tough for a guy to figure it out in 20 minutes of a practice session. And so I think now him having a bit of a notebook of what to take back. In his case, you know, it's tough because he never raced Xfinity cars. So he's only raced a high downforce truck. And so Xfinity cars, less downforce than these cars have. So, you know, I think kind of looking at him versus Harrison Burton's a good comparison, because, and they are really good buddies too, but Harrison did run some Xfinity stuff and he ran trucks, so he kind of knew the feel of what a truck went to an Xfinity car before he got in these cars. Well, Todd didn't have that opportunity. He drove trucks, maybe drove trucks too long actually, and so he's so used to all that security of all that downforce, now all of a sudden you don't have it, and now I'm looking for a different feel. And so I think that's been the thing he's had to adapt and learn to. And I think it's taken him probably, and I'm just a dummy sitting on the pit box, but I think it takes him like half the race maybe to really get it where, okay, that's what I got to feel like to get in that corner and get out that corner. And so I think when we go back to these tracks the second time, you know, we weren't very good at Richmond, but he was better than Michael at Richmond. You know, he was good the whole, he wasn't good, but he was as good as front row was going to be that day. So, you know, so I feel like when we go back to some of these tracks to Darlington a second time, and you know, other places. I think you know, we're going to see a little bit more speed out of him for sure.
And that's the key.
That's the key.
You want to see that improvement. Yep. He's got a great guy, obviously, to lean on. And Michael, we've touched on it. Mm-hmm. Another career year for him. The top tens have just exploded for that 34 team this year. Is that just a case of, as you said earlier, I mean, he's a really good race car driver, just getting to show it. I don't really know what else there is to say about Michael, because we know he's a good race car driver. This team just keeps getting better. So is that just his experience, new car? He's just getting to shine, it seems.
I think so. You know, he really felt like with this new car coming, this was going to roll right into his wheelhouse, you know, with a car that had more of a road racing feel to it. You know, and Michael's always, he's always got a lot of confidence now. And, you know, I think he felt like he'd probably win, you know, 30 races this year. But anyways, I think he's right. In some regard, I do believe that, you know, the car has come around to his hit the feel that, he, you know, he grew up learning, that he knows quite well. And so he's taken this 13, 14, 15 years of experience he's had in the Cup Series and applied it with his road racing background. But I feel like the group he's got around him is really good too. You know, and Blake Harris, Ryan Bergini, the car chief, Chris Yurgis, engineer, been with us for a long time. They have done a really good job of, you know, taking all this knowledge that we're learning this year and applying it to the next race, and with not a lot of help from outside sources. So, you know, even internally, you know, with Todd, we've kind of been on a different mission. So we haven't really been able, I think, for the 38 to help the 34 a lot. They have the last few weeks, but up to that point, they really hadn't. So it's kind of been the other way around. So, you know, I think the team itself has done a really good job. Even Clayton Hughes on the spotter stand, he's a veteran spotter, does a good job. So the whole group has just really executed, you know, I'm really proud of what those guys have done, and just the consistency week after week everywhere we go, you know, so I think there's more to come out of that bunch, so I'm excited to see how they do.
I remember you saying a couple years ago, Jerry, in interviews, that the front row was probably 3-4 years away, maybe, or a longer ways away from being considered playoff contenders. Mm-hmm. Does it seem like that's now becoming a little bit more realistic? Obviously, the Daytona win last year put you all in, but Michael ran very well last year to where he probably would have contended on points. I know that the penalty a couple weeks ago hurt the team, but does it seem like it's becoming a little bit more realistic to think about yourselves as contending to make the playoffs?
Yeah, I do. I certainly do. Yeah. You know, I hate we got that penalty, and it was a pretty harsh penalty. But all that said, you know, if we'd never had that penalty, you know, I think we would be 19th in the points right now. So, you know, obviously there's been a lot of winners this year, so 19th's not going to get it done. But in a lot of years, you're in that mix of those guys that could point their way in. So first you got to get there before you could actually do that. But yeah, I do think so. You know, I think it's more conceivable than ever that, you know, we could take this group and be able to get in the playoffs next year, even if we don't win a race. You know, or in past years, you know, it took a miracle of the fog rolling in at Pocono to, you know, get a shot like that. But now I think it is conceivable with this group and this car and this package, and, you know, so I think we could do it.
Yeah. One last thing for you, Jerry, to wrap up. You mentioned the re-signing of Zane. Mm-hmm. Michael, again, just continues to roll along and do his thing. Do you envision or hope that Front Row is in a position to where you're trying to have some stability with your teams and your drivers going forward? Because that 38 program has gone through a few drivers here the last couple years. Is the hope that you can kind of settle with these drivers for a couple years? Or what can you tell us about just what's to come for Front Row?
Yeah, it is. It is for sure. You know, I think the 34, you mentioned with 38, we just kind of had a churn of drivers since David Reagan retired, and just haven't really found the guy to build the program around, you know. But, you know, I truly feel like we got that with Todd. And, you know, we've got challenges there with the partnerships and just building everything around it. You know, we've had a lot of different sponsors on Todd's car this year, and it'd be great to, you know, find that one Loves Travel Stop type partner that we could marry up there, and we're working hard on that. And you know, unfortunately, sponsorships do dictate a lot of times, you know, who the drivers are. And but, you know, I I do, you know, I think our biggest challenge is that, you know, we got three drivers we really like right now and two charters. So, right. You know, at some point, I think Zane's going to feel like, hey, I'm ready to run the Cup Series, and then what are we going to do? So, but, you know, these things all seem to, you figure it out as you go along, and I feel pretty good about where we go in 2023, and then we'll just kind of see where it goes in 24.
It's a good problem to have,
it's
right? When you know
have.
You have the drivers, you just got
to
figure out where to put them.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Jerry, I always appreciate the time and the insight. Yep. Thank you again for welcoming me to the shop, and I appreciate the time this morning.
Anytime, Kelly.
Really enjoyed that conversation. My thanks again to Jerry for the time. We sat down early one morning at Front Row Motorsports before I hit the road to go to the racetrack. So thank you to Jerry for welcoming me over there. And of course, Jeff Dennison for coordinating, making sure that it fit on both of our schedules. Jeff and Jerry, always very accommodating to work with, and I thank both of them for their time. I hope you all enjoyed the episode. Again, a lot of good stuff in there to dig into when it comes to a mid-pack team. And I say mid-pack team, but let's be honest, it's not. That's not a slight. You know, Front Row Motorsports, again, has gone from a team that came in and was trying to make ends meet and got lucky with some races, but now they are contending. Michael McDowell is showing this is a group, this is an organization that can get the job done. Won the Daytona 500 last year. This year, as Jerry and I talked about, the top 10 finishes have just exploded. Having a career year. And now with this car, we'll have to see how that continues. And if Todd Gilliland continues to get seat time underneath him, don't underestimate how hard it is to be a rookie in the NASCAR Cup Series, especially with 20 minutes of practice every weekend before qualifying. We'll see what happens. But it's really cool, again, to see the development of Front Row Motorsports. And Jerry laid it out perfectly for us. So I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you learned something. Please leave a rating and review. You can do that, of course, wherever you're listening to this podcast or on social media. Go to Twitter. My handle is at Kelly Crandall. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. I appreciate the feedback. I appreciate all the reviews. They've been fantastic. A lot of great comments on social media that really go a long way. We're plugging right along in the podcast. I'm glad you all are interested. I hope you'll also go to Patreon. That's another way to support the podcast. The link for that is in the show description of this episode. Or just go to patreon.com/Kelly Crandall. Patreon is a way to support the podcast, and it's also a way for you to get more content from this podcast because you can sign up for different tiers and get different access, such as my show notes, what I was thinking going into an episode. Have been very honest over there lately at some of my preparation and just overthinking some things and how stressed I've been. As well as preview clips before episodes drop, have a chance to offer questions to upcoming guests, and so much more. So I hope you will head over to patreon.com this week, patreon.com/Kelly Crandall, and check it out. And with that, I bid you adieu for another week, another episode in the books. Next week, we're going to talk to Daylon Barr. He's an independent photographer in the NASCAR scene, has another one that is a great story, a lot going on of how he got into NASCAR and what he's doing, how he made his own business for himself and is doing what he loves. You might recognize him on social media because his photos, he is the main photographer for Trackhouse Racing, all the good stuff that they're sharing on social media when it comes to photography, but he's got a lot more clients, and as I said, he's got a great story, so we're going to dig into that next week right here on the Racing Writers Podcast.